We are, however, still waiting for the state law advisors. I thought that might be the first call of port, but let us not waste unnecessary time. We can wait for them. They have been given quite a substantial task, and I'm sure we can forgive them for being late. Can we perhaps just go to where we were and see, while we're waiting for them, if we can't proceed further? We were at 35 at the computers. Clause 35. And we have then moved on to 36. And we had certain agreements on 36. We went on to 37, which said that's the normal, your SEM clause. And we went on to 38, and there was a redrafting instruction that needed to go with 38. And then we went on to 39. And your attention was drawn to that the section 18 referred to there was the whole question of somebody being in possession of a classified document and the fact that that person had to refer that document or take it to the police or to the agency. So what 39 was then contemplating was then the person that did not do that would be guilty of an offense. And I think that is where we ended off last night, honorable members. Am I correct? I think also what we said is that the Smuts did have an objection to that whole combination. I think it is a objection that has been long standing, and that that objection was going to be noted. Honorable Apostini.
I too objected to 18, so the same objection with Karen in respect of the for the penalty. These are provisions which require the citizen to do the police job, and a reflection of this mindset of enlisting, this German mindset of enlisting citizens in spying on others and doing the police job, which we object to.
And we did say that we would note that. Can we then go on to 40?
This would be the time at which to discuss and for you to take our proposals on the public interest defense. Because the public interest defense is precisely the mechanism which deals with our objections to the criminalization of possession and disclosure. This is the appropriate time. So will you not allow us to table our proposals and briefly argue them?
Can I just get clarity? This is the same public defense that you have been complaining about for some time.
And I resent the use of the word complain. This thing will end up in the Constitutional Court, sir, so let's not be frivolous about it.
I don't need to be disrespectful on the member. I don't need to, such an early stage in the proceedings, to take offense. You have been objecting to this thing. Perhaps that's a better word. I just wanted to make sure that the objection that you are raising is still based on the same grounds. It's the same objection. And you want to be heard now. You want to repeat yourself. No, fine. I did promise you yesterday that I would give you more time on this one.
Yeah.
Like a similar opportunity when it comes.
Yeah. and Advocate SWAT.
Advocate SWAT, too.
Yeah. Chair.
Once I'm here, time.
As Dr. Ambrosini has just said, it is truly the security personnel to whom offences of possession and disclosure ought to apply, and that is to where they applied traditionally in comparative jurisdictions and in our own under the 82 Act. They are of limited use, particularly in our country, in our particular circumstances, where we know that certain problems exist. To give the only lawful disclosure under the PDA and related acts doesn't help a whole lot, because when you have a device and a mechanism such as the one in the PDA where a person has hierarchically to lodge their complaint about contraventions of the law within their own organization, it kind of defeats the purpose. If the contraventions of the law or the dishonesty or the inefficiency is occurring within an organization, it defeats the purpose to say you must hierarchically report upward and complain. And we all know that whistleblowing, alas, is not working very well in South Africa, in the sense that the whistleblowers are not, in fact, protected as the PDA intended. So this form of disclosure falls very far short of what is necessary in South Africa. And please now take the crime of possession together with disclosure. We all know that it is thanks to the leakage of certain information documents frequently classified to our investigative journalists, of whom we have a dozen or so outstanding ones. It is thanks to the fact that they come into possession of leaked information, thanks to the fact that they then disclose by publication, that we as South Africans know what is going on, that those South Africans who belong to the ruling party, one faction knows what the other faction is up to, and the other faction knows what the other faction is up to. Sunshine is the best disinfectant. It is actually important for democracy, not to mention the legal order, that all this information does come into the public domain. It is also our constitutional right to receive such information. We know under the ICCPR, which is built into Chapter 11 of the Constitution, that you can only restrict a citizen's right to receive information on the grounds of national security and only when necessary. We have a right to receive that information that Stefan Zimmer and Sam Sol and Adrian Basson and with the Council for Africa and all of the others routinely publish. We have a right to receive it. And they, as the media, have an enshrined right to media freedom. And it will be on those grounds eventually that a challenge to have a public interest defense will be mounted. We want to propose to you the following formulation. It is the very one that was accepted by the Casuals Ministry once they had conceded that it was not their intention to stop the press publishing disclosures. And the formulation is very simple. It reads as follows: notwithstanding any other provision in this Act, any act which constitutes a genuine and bona fide act in furtherance or promotion of the public interest shall not constitute an offence, and it applies to possession and disclosure. So it rests on two very simple things: bona fide work in the promotion of the public interest. It's that simple. There are other formulations possible where you put those two concepts down and then list a long list of factors which a court may take into account. We have another formulation which we can offer you which does that, and there are yet further formulations available. But we say we want a simple public interest defense based on bona fide action in the public interest, and I draw your attention to a single paragraph of the opinion written for the Jewish Board of Deputies, which you have kindly allowed me to distribute. On the very last page, at 21, paragraph 6, advocate, sometimes judge, sometimes Professor Kobus van Rooyen says, there should, with respect, not be a fear of the public interest defense. It is not a wise defense. And the survey of many judgments, where it has been considered and applied by the courts, illustrates a circumspect approach. The words must further not be defined in the bill. The courts know how to apply the concept. There is a definition in here. The courts do know how to apply it. They do it with circumspection. You don't have to be afraid of it, and it will render the bill constitutional. Thank you, sir.
The Honourable Swart.
Chair, I would just ask that when we address you on this issue, that yes, it has been repeated before, but I would ask that we could possibly hear some cogent counter arguments should the arguments that we present not find favour. In particular, Chair, the main thrust of my argument is the fact, firstly, that there is international precedent for a public interest offence. And I can go into more detail, but I know our time is limited. Secondly, the point that even if your argument is correct, that there is not international jurisdiction, if you want to follow the UK model, South Africa is in a unique situation. And our prior legislation, which results from a secrecy and an apartheid system, was introduced to deal specifically that secrecy legislation should punish only those state officials who have an original duty to protect. And we need the principle of transparency and openness that Mr. Landers emphasized when the ANC made a number of concessions. Secondly, Mr. Landers also mentioned the need for constitutionality of this bill line with us as members of Parliament. And I think, Chair, if we should consider a public interest offense, firstly, broadly considered, as Honorable Smuts has considered, which I fully support, but even a very narrow public interest defense along the lines of the prior defense that we have now built in. And I think it's so important for us to understand the difference between that override, which we've now built in, and the inclusion of a defense along those same lines. Should the majority party not be prepared to consider a broad public interest defense, a narrow public interest defense is logical. And Chair, I have the argument, the anomalous argument, the anomalous argument, I have not heard any counter argument to that. Because of our history, because of the uniqueness, and I was part of the drafting of PIA, and we have to understand, Chair, that if documents can be released under PIA, on the application, despite the threat that those contents pose to national security, that is the override. It would be anomalous not to allow the similar situation in a public defense argument. And to, that is, to me, there is no logic in not having that limited public interest defense, similar now to the override that we have built in. And Chair, I would ask us to very seriously consider that. The issue of public interest, we've already built into our bill. So it's not an unknown concept. There are various parts. We've built it in with the PDA. We've built it in on other aspects there. Public interest is a very important consideration. And I would ask us, Chair, to seriously consider the benefit of including a narrowly crafted, and there's been criticism about that overriding PIA because it's been so narrow. The benefit is it will enhance the constitutionality of the bill. And let's be frank amongst us. The two sticking points on this bill is the broadness of the national security definition and the public interest affair. If we can meet each other on those two issues, we will have consensus on this bill. It will enhance the constitutionality of the bill. It will enhance the argument of moving from a culture of secrecy to openness. It will encourage the fight against fraud and corruption. And let us bear in mind what the ANC Secretary General said, that no journalist will be prosecuted for exposing corruption, whether he is, and one implies, whether he is in possession of classified documents or not. And Chair, let us also bear in mind this is not only about the media, this is about citizens. And you'll recall my article in the Sunday Times emphasized that point. It is the citizens that are also involved here. It will also be a political win-win situation should we include a narrow public interest defense. And so, Chair, I'd ask you to seriously consider, what is the practical effect? We talk about this. A journalist or a member of the public, that is in possession. Let's use the argument that you raised, the person that breaks into your house. He will be charged with burglary. He could raise the defense that he was actually unaware of that was your property or that he owned the property. That is a defense that can be disproved. The onus is on him to disprove or to prove his defense. He's in possession of classified documents that Kuberg is about to explode. Should he then be charged for disclosing that or publishing it? He will say it's a defense in terms of the public interest and the narrow defense now that we are going to consider that we've got in the override of 46. Imminent danger to the public safety. He will have to persuade the court. If the court says this is not imminent or you've got agents' lives at risk here and balancing the harm, the court says doesn't matter about that. You've placed agents' harms in danger, therefore your defense is not accepted, we find you guilty. So the mere insertion of a public interest defense does not mean that a journalist or a member of the public will be found not guilty and gets away with it. The court will balance it, just as the court does now with the prior override, will balance the harm against the public interest and will reach a consideration. And that is what is happening in terms of our international jurisdiction. That is what is happening in terms of international law. We've got the Canadian situation. That we know is a narrow public interest defense along the lines of the whistleblower. But what is so important is that a journalist was charged there. And the court struck down the offenses that we want to build in here for being unconstitutional and in conflict with the freedom of the press and the freedom of expression. Do we want to go that same route where the first journalist or the first member of public that is charged under these offenses, the court strikes it down as being unconstitutional? And Chair, there are a number of other jurisdictions. The New Delhi, a public interest defense, has now been upheld. A jury has acquitted a journalist on a public interest defense. There are various others that I've been looking at. We can, and I'm sure Dr. Ambrosini can help us on the USA. We know the First Amendment there. The UK issue is a very interesting issue, and we can deliberate on that as well. But in that case, a jury acquitted in the Belgrana case. The judge said there's no public interest defense, but the jury acquitted the person that divulged, the journalist that divulged the information. And that issue has not come up again because the government does not want to test the public opinion. It knows it will lose that. So, Chair, I'd ask us to seriously consider this because this, to me, as Mr. Dloma said, is a deal maker. We can reach major consensus. It would be a major win-win situation in the public eyes, constitutionally, if we consider a very narrow public interest defense. It is logical. It's already there in the prior. I don't see what the argument can be against it, building in a similar, narrowly crafted, not the broad public interest defense. And I think that's where we miss each other. Over the weekend, there was an application brought to court to stop the publication of a document about Mr. Julius Malema. That was on a public interest, which is a broad public interest. What I'm talking about is a narrowly public interest defense along the lines of what we've already built in for the override. And I've got waiting for that, Chair, and I thank you for your indulgence. I did go on a bit, but I hope you I appreciate that. Thank you, Chair.
Before I go on to the Honourable Ambrosini, does your view of this public interest defense differ anyone from that of the DA?
Chair, we agree in broad terms as to the need of a public interest defense. I appreciate that the majority party might have a difficulty with a broad definition. I would propose in the alternative a narrow definition along the lines of the prior definition. Whilst that is not my first part, obviously, but I do appreciate the concerns that have been expressed by the majority party about the public interest defense, and I think that it is a way we can meet each other by having a narrowly crafted public interest defense along the lines of prior. And I think it's a very important distinction.
The distinction you say exists between your narrow view and
as an alternative, Chair. Okay. I support the DA for their broad submission, but I would suggest that if the majority party is not prepared to consider that broadness, that we look at a narrow definition in the alternative.
Well, I proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would wish to address you today on three defenses. The public, which are conceptually different. The public interest defense, the public domain defense, and the erroneous classification defense. So I...
Honorable Member,
I will now...
Before you proceed, I want to remind you of the agreement I entered into with you yesterday. And that was that I would give you time to address us on the public interest defense. Do you recall that?
No, that is correct, but I'm trying to distinguish what I'm saying today now from the other two. I'm not going to speak about the other two now. I will do so at the appropriate time, but I want to premise that I'm going to speak now about the public interest defense only.
Fine.
Which is conceptually different from the public domain defense and the erroneous classification defense, which I will address you when you, Mr. Chairman, give me an opportunity to do so. Mr. Chairman, I hope that you may give me leave to speak directly to my colleagues and address them as colleagues in the hope to reach through their political heart and to political minds. And with a plea of disregarding the messenger, let's focus on the messenger. Let's not consider that it is I, a political opponent at times, who carries the message. It is the message that matters, not the messenger. We live in a different world, and this has been stressed time and again. In this sophisticated world of ours, coup d'etat do no longer take place with tanks rolling into the streets. Yes, not in modern democracies. They take place by means of deviant actions, of deviant sectors of security services in Italy, in France, in the United States. And they can give many cases, and then they're brought back. And that happens under the cloud of secrets. What we are talking about here are not the rights of the press, are the rights of the citizens and the strength of democracy. My plea here is for you to give to South Africans and to South Africa the same measure of freedom enjoyed by each and every American under the First Amendment right. And Mr. Lander shakes his head. I hope that he does so out of lack of knowledge and not bad faith. Throughout the entire Cold War, and it's not a laughable matter, just focus your matter, colleague, because this is serious. Throughout the entire Cold War, throughout the entire World War II, not a single journalist has ever been prosecuted in America for having published classified information, because it can't happen. Those who leak it go to jail. Those who publish cannot be touched. The First Amendment says Congress shall make no law about the press. So nothing that the press can be done, do, can be sanctioned by law of Congress, obviously by common law for the law of defamation. Yes. I was watching the other night a documentary about the CIA recovering a broken submarine of the Soviet Union during the Cold War, and they spent a huge amount of money to camouflage the nature of the operation in fear that the press would get hold of it. Because once the press gets hold of it, there is no power to stop the publication of that. Here we have a mindset of trying to get the law to do the job of the intelligence service, trying to get the law to keep things secret. It is their job to keep things secret. If they fail and things leak out, the cat is out of the bag. That's how it works. Now, in this is not the first time that we discuss this. It's not the first. The country has been discussing this. The public opinion has been discussing this. The ANC heard what was said and reacted to it. And your reaction has been the review panel board. And undoubtedly, in your reply, you're going to say, but listen, we address your concern. We have an independent review panel board, which will take care that nothing goes wrong. Now, Dean, would you be with me? The real choice before all of us, and we need to, and the nation, is whether we believe that the job of freedom can be done by an organ of state. Let's look at the Human Rights Commission, the Public Protector, and the Auditor General. All three of them. I would never, ever give up the freedom of the press for all three of them. If we look at the past 15 years, 20 years of South African history, the violation, all that which has been exposed, all that which has prevented human rights violations, has come from the press. The Mail and Guardian, the Sunday Times, all the press as a whole has been by way more effective in protecting our freedom than the Human Rights Commission, the Public Protector, and the Auditor General placed together. And this is where it doesn't pay, it doesn't make sense to trade the freedom, within civil society, with the establishment of an organ of state, which may work very well, or may suffer the same problems as other organs of state of being underfunded, staffed with cronies, or not function to expectations. It may happen. The press is a certainty in South African history. That freedom cannot be traded away because we established a review panel board. My last submission, because I'm trying to speak to the, if I can reach it to your political heart, is that I don't understand what's happening. It's not me speaking. It is the country. If there is one item in which the entire country, from Cossato to the religious leaders today, to anyone, who is anyone, and also those who are not anyone, they said we want to have the public interest the same. There is a complete divorce between public will, general will, and public policy. How does that happen? Who do you represent? You heard the submission. Are you carrying the brief from the security apparatus? What the people want,
honorable member,
it's been told before.
Can public interest effect?
Yes, I'm motivating for it. I'm motivating with the
honorable member with respect. You're getting into political discussion.
Yes, of course I am. I am motivating because this is my job under the Constitution to bring here on this issue the voice of all those who have written, the voice of Cossato, the voice of the churches, the voice of the intellectuals, the voice of the people. This is what my constitutional job is. To be representative of those people. And my submission to you is that to the extent that you are not representing the will of the nation, in a matter in which the will of the nation is absolutely clear and unanimous, there is this divorce. And if the will of the nation is weaker than the will of the security apparatus, and if we don't listen to the will of the nation, to heed to the needs of the security apparatus against international standards, then a coup d'etat has already taken place. There is no reason not to give to South Africa the same measure of First Amendment rights protection that is given to the states, which is present in Canada, and that we have enjoyed as a matter of fact for the past 20 years, in which there has been no law, and we all know that myth cannot be enforced. Let us at least maintain the status quo. No journalist today is afraid of publishing a top secret security document because there is no law and this cannot be enforced. Let us not create the fear. When it comes down to the freedom of the press, the most important concept is the chilling effect. Press becomes inhibited from performing its essential function because of fear of prosecution. And the most important thing about guaranteeing the freedom of the press is to eliminate that fear. So the public interest defense must be clear, must be unambiguous, must be stuff that does not create fear. I'm concluding the sentence, and I really appeal to you to do what the nation demands and expects of you. I've completed it, so he can shut me down as he wish, but it is not me. You're shutting down the nation.
Yes, honorable member.
No, thank you, Chairperson. We have listened to Honorable Ambrosini on his motivation and trying to persuade us to understand what he's trying to tell us. But ultimately, he's not coming to the point. Can we suggest through you, Chairperson, that let him make his point so that we understand what he wants to tell us?
Finish his point now.
Yeah. Okay.
Can
I obviously, can I have a point of clarification? That's a point of clarification which has been raised. If I can answer quickly. I've given
it's
them
not a point of clarification.
Well, you asked me to make obviously it's not clear.
Not a point of clarification. You have said so many things, Honorable Ambrosini, without getting to the point. And what I'm saying to the chairperson is that we have listened to your tautology, but still you have not convinced us as of what is it that you want to say. And we are asking for the chair to please call you to order.
Landis.
May I supplement in light of what the colleague is saying? It will take me a second.
I recognize Honorable Landis. I'll get to you after Honorable Landis.
Chairperson, thank you. The bill renders it an offense to receive or have possession of classified information and to disclose such information. We acknowledge that the media is particularly susceptible to such contraventions given its unique role in society. If the media were to receive classified information, that in itself would be an offense. Should it publish the information, that amounts to a further offense. The anxiety of the media is therefore understandable, and the issues raised require careful consideration. Clause 23 of the bill goes some way towards addressing this concern by providing for a process to request classified information. If the media has been legally provided with classified information, it is in the unique position of knowing what the information is. It can completely define and formulate a request for the information from the relevant organ of state and obtain that information through a legitimate process before publishing, as opposed to publishing without making any attempt to obtain the information using legitimate means. If the request for disclosure is successful, whether from the organ of state or on appeal to the minister, the bill ought to make provision for excluding criminal sanctions for the possession of such material for a period before the decision to disclose was made and during which the information should not have been classified. The decision to disclose the information necessarily carries with it the conclusion that the information should not have remained classified, hence the declassification and its disclosure. In other words, the decision to disclose should operate retrospectively to some earlier point. It would be anomalous and contrary to the Constitution, Chair, for the bill to criminalize the possession of such material whilst it is still erroneously classified. We make that point. Such a provision would be contrary to the principle of legality. As far as the question of publishing classified information obtained illegitimately is concerned, the issues of media freedom and the rule of law must be considered. It is not open to the media to ignore the decision to classify the information, even if it believes that the decision to classify the information was invalid or that the information should have been declassified. The rule of law requires the media to comply with the law, which means, as it applies to the rest of us, the media is bound to respect the decision on classification until it is altered by a competent authority. We have in our Constitution a clause or a section that refers to equality. So the media cannot place itself outside of the section in the Constitution that refers to equality. the rule of law applies to all of us equally. It cannot apply to me in one aspect and to the media differently. The legal position has been stated, Chairperson, in the case Vodacrol Estates Limited, Pty Limited versus City of Cape Town, and I quote, until the administrator's approval, and thus also the consequences of the approval, is set aside by a court in proceedings for judicial review, it exists in fact, and it has legal consequences that cannot simply be overlooked. The proper functioning of a modern state would be considerably compromised if all administrative acts could be given effect to or ignored, depending on the view the subject takes of the validity of the act. No doubt it is for this reason that our law has always recognized that even an unlawful administrative act is capable of producing legally valid consequences for so long as the unlawful act is not set aside. Close quotes. If the media believe that the information should be disclosed and that it is a matter of such importance that the public need to be informed about, their remedy would be to seek to obtain the information through legitimate channels. This would mean that the media is required to take the appropriate steps in terms of the bill to obtain access to the information. It is not permitted to simply go ahead and publish the information provided to it illegitimately. Now, Chairperson, with regard to the public interest defense, we understand that this means that the media should be entitled to rely on such a defense where it publishes classified information that has come into its possession illicitly and illegally and without having to obtain the same information through legitimate channels in terms of the bill that is before us. It is necessary to distinguish between the public interest override that currently is in the bill that makes it mandatory for the authority concerned to disclose the information and a public interest defense in the sense that would absolve the media from criminal liability for having in its possession or disclosing classified information. Chairperson, what the court would need to do is to weigh competing interests in this matter. The competing interests of national security and the rights of the media as set out in the Constitution. There are other legal precedents that I won't refer to, just as Mr. Swart alluded to, said, Chairperson, but we stress you cannot have classified documents floating around. And hence the provision that we put in the law that forces persons in possession of that document to return them to the necessary authority. Documents acquired illegally must be handed back before a formal request for them is made and before they are published. Chairperson, we constantly hear this threat, and we heard it again today, even if it is made as a threat, we want to say we would welcome the proposed challenge in the Constitutional Court on this matter. Chairperson, those are our responses to most of what has been said this morning. Just very briefly, Chair, we've covered this ground, but if you just give me a bit of space to do so. Mr. Ambrosini holds the First Amendment as something wonderful to behold. He makes the point this morning that whistleblowers, those who leak, like Bradley Manning, they are punished, but not the journalists. And he raised a wonderful thing. As far as I'm concerned, it's not. It's not worth the paper it's written on. He speaks of coup d'etat. Well, we've seen coup d'etat. Iraq was a coup d'etat. Libya is a coup d'etat happening as we speak. We've seen coup d'etats in Gambia, Guinea-Bissau, and other such countries. So it is erroneous to say we no longer see coup d'etats. We no longer see coup d'etats as they used to happen. Well, yeah, okay. So you qualify. So those coup d'etats then are justified because they are not modern democracies. Iraq is not a modern democracy, and therefore George W. Bush and the rest of them were justified in effecting coup d'etats. Well, they are not modern democracies, and therefore coup d'etats are justified. Chairperson, those who leak must be punished. That is Mr. Ambrosini's view. Those who leak are punished in America in terms of First Amendment, but not the journalists. Think about that and tell me what's right about it. Thank you, Chairperson.
You want a short rebuttal, Honorable Ambrosini?
Thank you. I must say, I'm very confused, Mr. Chairman, so forgive me if I'm not very clear, but I must say it's the first time that I've seen the response to a dialogue in a committee being delivered with a pre-prepared statement. And if I were not, I don't want to be disrespectful of the Honorable Landers, whom I highly, highly respect, because it's a man of enormous stature and great track record as a Democrat. I think that nobody can question the democratic credentials of the Honorable Landers. But, I mean, forgive me for this, but I need to understand what is going on here. And the question comes to my mind, I mean, who writes this thing? Okay, thank you for clarifying that, because the question comes to my mind. Now, let me answer the question, what it is that I want. I can give you words, but it's not what I want, it's what the country wants. I can give you my words to try to capture what has been said around here. Get to the point, colleague said. Okay, here's the point. The point is the offense. Anyone charged with an offense under this act shall be entitled to raise as a fully disculpatory defense the disclosure of the relevant information was done for a compelling reason of public interest or importance. Now, it is a defense. So, it is not and by being a defense, you take a chance. So, it's not something which definitional says is not a crime. It is something that you just opposed to a crime. It's the yes, but. I've done it, but this is the reason. That's the point. And it is about, I want to clarify that, because I mean, the words are either not fully properly conveyed by me or not fully understood or twisted. But what I said, that the challenge is confronting modern democracy are not about the security apparatus of the military rolling out the tanks. The challenges confronting modern democracies for which we must provide for the future of this democracy are about the security services taking over the reins of government from inside in a covert manner and running their own operations that nobody knows about. And only exposure can make that happen. Example, the Iran Contra scandal. In the United States, in a democratic country, the CIA was running a private war in Nicaragua, which nobody knew about it because what they felt was necessary, and they were funding with proceeds from Iran, oil sales. And until the press revealed it, there was no congressional involvement. Congress could get involved because it was revealed. And the journalists need to have the latitude of seek, of going around, of trying to get people to speak, of getting documents, and one document may lead to the other. We are not to tell them how to do it. We must register how it is done. And finally, at this point that Mr. Landers has been made many, many, many times, and you wish to ignore it, please, just respect our intelligence and accept the point, which is not us making it. It's Cassandra, it's the country. This has got nothing to do with the press. The quality clause doesn't come about. It's got to do with we the people. They are the conduit. It's not their right to write. It's not their right to publish. It's our right to know. That's why the right to know campaign comes here. They are the vehicle. This is about people knowing what's going on. A quality clause is not the issue.
Right. You see, honorable members, when I, out of good heart, to allow you indulgences, I will really like you to respect that, because I do it in all sincerity. I wouldn't like to feel that you're abusing the process. I'm just talking in general, honorable member. I'm just talking in general. I did agree with you that I would give you the space for your time. Space. I know it's important to you. Most of what you said, personally, I don't agree with, but I will respond to that in due course, perhaps not today. But I thought what was useful out of everything you said was when you started to read the wording. That was very useful. If you can circulate that wording, if it is different from your, it's the same still in your IFP document, fine. And I think it was useful that you reminded us that this is included in your IFP document, your IFP 2 document. Honorable Mayor, you want to give us some wording now?
Thank you, Chair. I would like to give you some wording.
Yes.
I'd like to just make a statement before that in response to the Honorable Landers. Now, I mean, the Honorable Landers frames the problem as a problem dealing with all classified information. The problem is really focused on a particular kind of classified information, and that would be classified information that reveals some kind of wrongdoing. That really is the problem that we have to grapple with. Now, the Honorable Landers has been at pains on several occasions to make the point that the intention of the ruling party is not, through this bill, to hide wrongdoing and corruption. He's made that point repeatedly. And it's precisely for that reason that we have Section 17.1b in the bill, which says that information, for example, that conceals any kind of unlawful act should not be classified. And it's for the same reason that that Mr. Dloma said that in the classification process, that documents which, for example, reveal an unlawful act cannot be classified. Now, if documents cannot be classified because they reveal an unlawful act, then surely there should be no reason why they ought not to be disclosed. Now, the reason that we have 17.1b in the bill is precisely because we recognize that information, or any information that reveals some kind of unlawful act or wrongdoing, cannot prejudice or harm a democratic state. That's the departure point. It is recognized as a principle in the bill. Now, my colleague Dean Smith has argued for a broad public interest defense clause, which is set out in the 2008 memorandum attached to the bill. The alternative is to consider a more narrow public interest defense. I wondered whether we could then not consider, and I refer to Clause 38, amending Clause 38 so that the existing clause, the existing clause would become an A,
and then to insert a B, which would read something like, unless such classified information is used to, and then we take the wording straight out of 17.1b. Unless such classified information is used to conceal an unlawful act or omission, incompetence, inefficiency, or administrative error, etc. So 38 would then read roughly as follows. Any person who discloses classified information, or information referred to in 11.3, that will change, outside the manner and the purposes of the act, etc., is guilty of an offense. Fine. Unless such classified information reveals some kind of unlawful act, and we use the formulation in 17.1b.
And 1 through 5.
Correct. 17b and Roman 1 through 5.
Are you referring to the 46? Higher 46 thing?
No.
Right, those principles.
Correct. And
this
is, yeah, it's a little wider than that, yeah, but this is, we recognize that that classified information, which, for example, reveals an unlawful act, cannot be classified. Why do we recognize that? Because we recognize the principle that that kind of information cannot harm or prejudice the democratic state. In fact, it advances the values of, by disclosing that information, we advance the values and principles of the democratic state. So let's simply say that if you reveal classified information, you would be guilty of an offense, unless that classified information reveals some form of unlawful act, administrative error, etc., all the aspects set out in 17.1b, Roman 1 through 5. I wonder if the... Thank you.
The mentor wanted to be heard.
I wanted to say that that sounds reasonable, and it's noted. You would engage on this.
The Honourable Swart.
Chair, I do align myself with what my colleague, Mr. Mania, has said. I would also ask you to, in considering that, as well as the proposal that I considered, I'm also prepared to give you wording, which is not wording that I've put in my original document, but it would contain the reference to the 46 override as another proposition, and I think we already know what that wording is, but I will hand in containing the concept of the 46 override that we've already contained and repeating that as a defense, that which is even narrower, but as an alternative argument for your consideration. Can I just ask if everyone, would you like me to read that, or is it...
I think it's, if you can just give it to the secretary, it will be circulated so that we can combine the two, the one that came from the Honourable Mania and your one, so combine it into one that can just be dealt with collectively. The Honourable Memento?
I'm going to go to the
We also did ask the state law advisor to look at redrafting that clause. And I think we have not yet had a report back on that, so we expect to find that that alteration has been made, Honourable Member. Honourable Member, before I go over to the state law advisor, now I think we have heard you well on the public defense. It was particularly helpful when you start putting words to, you know, all the motivation, because one now has a conceptual idea of what it is that you're really talking about. You know? And so, from what I hear from the Honorable Landers, this will be looked at, and I'm sure you will get a report back on this very soon. Yes, we were expecting that. That's what I'm saying now. The words of the Honourable Swat and your words, we don't want to confuse which one came from where, but they are different. You can put them on different papers, but I think it's like to be circulated. If you can just do that. I don't want to capture from what I wrote down for fear that I might have captured the thing incorrectly. I did write down what he said, but I think if you can give us that, it'd be fine. Before I get over to the state law advisors on the board, there is 40, 41, and 42. I think we need to do that first, and then we're going to get to 43. And then, can we just look at 40?
I haven't got 40. I'd just like to be clear that the proposal which I made is in respect of 38 and 39. Okay.
And then 40, there's no problem there. Oh, yes, sorry. Yes, I know. You want to play?
If I'm a member of society, ordinary member of society, I come across information that I think warrants to be looked at by a intelligence person. And I'm not sophisticated in a decipher whether it's very true or not true. I've not fabricated it. But I trust and hope that all the accusations will be able to determine the truthfulness if I perceive it to be dangerous. I will be guilty of an offense of falsifying, not truthfulness, determining the truthfulness of the truth of information that I'm submitting to an intelligence person.
No, certainly not, Honourable Member. If I was the judge in your matter, I would find you not guilty on what you've said. Because the 40 specifically says that knowingly, that you knowing, and if you didn't know, I would not be able to find you guilty. The issue of really 40 is that you know that the thing has failed, that the information has been fabricated. And that is... I think perhaps also we need to add the element of unlawfulness here. I don't see it. Can that be looked into, that in 40 state law advisor, that you need to add the element of unlawfulness. I don't like these things when you imply unlawfulness and you imply intent. I think we need to state it. The Honourable Fisher.
You know, there used to be a saying before. It was in Latin on the law, saying, ignorantia juris minimum excusat. Ignorance of the law does not afford excuse. They used to say that. Of course, perhaps it's no more working now.
Not a longer time. Do we then going on to 41, Honourable Members? You're going to destroy this? This is valuable information. There can be nothing wrong with that. The unlawfulness is there. Yes.
As I said before, Chairman, this thing pertains to valuable information not classified. This offence already exists in the National Archives and Public Records Act. You will see it says any person who unlawfully destroys or alters valuable information. Valuable information, ordinary information, which you mustn't throw away. This doesn't deal with sensitive or classified information. The offence already exists in the National Archives Act. It is my wish that all reference to valuable information should come out of this law. This is the wrong thing in the wrong place. It's the right thing in the wrong place. It already is an offense.
Honourable Member, I did look at the ECT archives. I looked at the archives too. It's not in the same form. But can we cross-reference that?
Cross-reference means there's one element missing, but for the rest of the offense is the same.
Cross-reference to bring the offence in the Archives Act that you were referring to and bring the two together to check precisely what is the difference. You wanted to be heard, Honourable Landers, and then Honourable Menu?
It simply confirms that it's fine as an offence. In a sense, it's provided for in another law. Is there harm in repeating it here? I'm just posing that as a question.
There's no harm. It's very often that there is an offence that is referred to in two different laws, and it's for the prosecutor to decide under which law you want to charge him. Honourable Men.
In addition to what Honourable Landers is asking, what was the intention of Clause 51? I think in cross checking what you feel must cross-check, and in answering Honourable Landers' question, you must also ask what was the intention of this clause. Probably, not unless we have another clause in the Act that that intends to prohibit. I'm distracted from behind here. I need your protection.
Honourable Members, can you settle down?
Thanks. Not unless there is another clause in the this bill that protects or prohibits destruction of classified information. So in addition to that question, I would like to ask the intention and also ask whether there is any way in the piece of legislation that prohibits destruction of classified information and punishes it, and identifies it as an offence and punishes it accordingly.
Honourable Member, this particular clause 41 is referring specifically to valuable information. The bill seeks to protect two types of information. The one type of information that the bill seeks to protect is valuable information. The other type is sensitive being your secret. The valuable information it is trying to protect from special circumstances. trying to protect valuable information from being interfered with, from being lost, or from being destroyed. That will be any valuable information is defined in the Act in the hands of your organ of state. Now, what would be the point in trying to protect the information in that sense if you were not going to punish those that interfered with it? So the bill starts off in the beginning going to a very large extent to protect this valuable, set up the guidelines under which this valuable information needs to be protected. And same like classified information would have served no purpose if you wanted to protect it and you didn't hold into your code any form of punishment if somebody didn't do that. Yes, Honorable Mayor? I'll get Honorable Mayor and then Honorable Mentor, Honorable Mayor and then Honorable Swat.
Thanks, Chair, for your assistance. And I think based on that, we must not just throw away 41. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just earlier this week, you kindly adjourned for a few minutes after there was major news about the appointment of the CJ. I believe there is now another, I think the court judgment is now out. I know that our Justice Chair and also our Justice spokespersons of the various parties need to deal with this quite urgently. And I wonder if we could call for a short adjournment.
Fly down to Johannesburg now to hear the judgment. Well, has the judgment been read already?
Chair, I would just like to consult with Mr. Landers. Unanimously ruled unconstitutional for the President.
Honorable Mayor, has the judgment been read already?
Chair, it has been given.
It's been delivered.
It's been delivered. And thank you.
I want to make sure clear that you're not going to want to listen to the delivery. And you are on the same point. Because you wanted to be
correct, Chair. Thank you. On the same point. Just a short
Honorable Landers, you are also on this point. Now it's 10:45. Can I give it till 11? Honourable members, I am going to adjourn for 15 minutes. In that 15 minutes, you will take note of what the judgment says, who said it, and what your disagreements are. We will report back here after 15 minutes. We will proceed with the work at hand. Honourable members, your 15 minutes are up and I'm going to stop. Can you take your seats, please? So, Honourable Members, after the explanation that the 41 applies to valuable information, valuable information is still very much a part of the bill. And it seems to follow that this is a necessary clause. Yes.
That implies, though, that you're going to keep valuable information in the bill.
Yes. Well, there has been no proposal to the contrary.
So that's
and we're not going to deal with that now.
No, we're not going to deal with it. But please, for the record, it is not so that there's no proposal to the contrary. It has been our position from the start, reiterated time and again, that it has no place in this bill and entire chapters ought to be deleted. Please look at DA's amendment.
Let's get back to that again. But for what you said on the member, if the information, the valuable information remains, then I'm sure, even though you are going to remain, if it did remain, then the 41 would be relevant.
One writes double offences in different statutes.
We did say we will do the cross-reference with the Archives Act, which you draw attention to. Will the state law advisor just take note of that? 41, to cross-reference it with the Archives Act to see in which way they differ. Then can we go to 42 on the mass? This is surely one that you don't disagree with. Yes, Honourable London.
We did agree we would increase the penalty. Certainly 3 years is hopelessly inadequate. We did qualify that by saying we should look at the provisions in the Prevention of Corruption Act, POCA, and see if there's any corresponding provision in that lordship to assist us in that.
There's no minimum sentencing. We don't want to add a minimum sentence. So the only consideration then is to check whether the three-year period is not too less to what's in it. Can we take on board, I think, the Honourable Kutsi or the Honourable Stibbe has raised at one stage that depending on whether you're dealing with secret, top secret or confidential, that the sentences might differ. So that this 42 might then be adjusted so that if you took the liberty to classify something knowing that you shouldn't classify as top secret, you would be in the severe category as opposed to somebody that took the liberty merely to see if you would be caught and classified it as confidential. Is that what was, I think it was the Honourable Stibbe that advised it. Are you on this point, Honourable Member? Yes, Honourable.
Let me first address this last part. The advantage of not having minimum sentences is that the judge can make that assessment on the gravity of the so he could adjust whether he classified confidential, secret, or top secret. The difficulty that I would have is that it makes it very difficult because it is improper classification, and classifying it top secret. Classifying something top secret when it was a breach of the law doesn't necessarily make it any less secret to the general public or to the police. That's the first consideration, but there I don't have a very strong feeling. Where I do have a very strong feeling in line with our proposed amendment is that we don't need to look at other legislation to identify what is the proper sanction to this specific crime. If we look at this very legislation, what we have here is a balancing situation. You disclose, you get punished. You classify improperly, you get punishment. I would apply the concept that what's good for the goose is good for the gander. So I would put this in balance with Section 38, with Clause 38. I would apply the same sanction provided for in 38 for the unlawful disclosure to the unlawful classification. It seems that it would be appropriate.
5 years. You want to increase it to 5 years, Honourable Member? Yeah, the practical outcome of what you're proposing is
at least 5 years. I would like to have it more, but in our suggestion, in our document, I said 25 years, which it admittedly is excessive, but 5 year minimum, 10 years later.
Rhonda?
Chair, let's just reiterate. In terms of Mr. Stubbs' intervention, let us agree that we need to provide for instances where classification has been done and it's marked confidential, and it is revealed that that was done unlawfully and improperly. We need an offense for that. Similarly, we need an offense where improper classification is done to a document marked secret and to those done top secret. We don't agree with Mr. Ambrosini. 5 years is hopelessly inadequate. We stand by the view that we should look at what is in POCA. We're not saying we must simply take what's in POCA, but to look at what is in POCA to assist us. That's all.
Honourable members, can we move on? I think we understand each other on that one. A security matter 43.
You'll recall that we've discussed Clause 43 in the past, and in our proposals we proposed that 43 be deleted. I mean, I'm sure that you would agree that particularly if you look at the definition of state security matter, which is broad and includes anything to do with the agency, the effect of this would be that if information, to use the Honourable Ambrosini's formulation, about the Director General of the NIA's lunch menu was disclosed, individuals would that would be an offence, and one would be in prison for 10 years or more. This clause is a draconian clause, Chair, and I believe that it ought to be. We believe that it ought to be deleted. The fact of the matter is that this kind of disclosure, if I'm not mistaken, is already included in security legislation for disclosure of classified information.
Are you suggesting in its entirety, from A to D?
Delete.
Don't want to delete anything. The Honourable Ambrosini.
Mr. Chairman, what is the state security matter in terms of this bill? No, I know, it's a rhetorical question, Dean. Let me rephrase it in a way that is more clear. Let us focus on what it is that it is a state security matter. A state security matter is something which is over and above what is classified. What is classified is classified. If it is divulged, then there is a sanction. We have gone at great length to make sure that all that which we think that ought to be classified can and will be classified. So everything which needs to be protected has been protected. This deals with things over and above what can be classified. If any of the state security matters which relate to the matters relating to the agency are in any matter, in any case, sensitive, in any reason sensitive, they can be classified and that they are taken care of. If for any reason there is a reason to not divulge the lunch menu of the Inspector General of Intelligence, that can be classified and is taken care of. So my argument is that this really is it makes no sense. It is not basis in policy. It is not basis in what we are trying to achieve. It's almost a reflection of a security mindset left over from apartheid. All that which has got to do with us is classified. If that's the case, it's classified though. But this is a loophole as big as the entire bill, because it would enable the security apparatus to classify all data which is not classifiable under 15 and 17 by calling it a state security matter. The loophole is much larger than the entire bill. we keep these, then we can throw 15 and 17 out, because all you need to do is to attach a sticker. This has got to do with that, and it's a state security matter. All the criteria for classification and declassification do not apply. If they do apply, then it's useless, because it is covered by the other provisions.
So, Honorable Member, you was asking for it to be deleted in its entirety.
Simply with our standing submission.
I recognize the Honorable Mentor and then the Honorable Honor.
So I don't agree. I think if you delete this clause in its entirety, you are actually effectively rendering this entire bill useless. It will be a backdoor way of actually nullifying this whole thing. So I don't think that we should agree. If there are sections that are worthy of considering in this bill, let's talk about that. But I suggest that we must remove the entirety of the bill. It would be a reversal of the entire exercise of bringing this bill into being.
Honorable Smart, I didn't recognize you. Can you control yourself, Honorable Smart? Honorable Longus.
Can I help you?
Exception to the remarks that are done in jest, out of jest, behind me. If they want to engage with what I have said, then they have the decency of raising their hands, being noted, and be allowed to speak.
Allow me to handle the situation. Honourable Member, sometimes when you make statements in jest, it's accepted, sometimes it's not. It seems more late at night that you people do tolerate statements in jest. But what I think is not proper is that when an honourable member is talking and addressing this committee, that you disturb the honourable member by fidgeting and talking behind the honourable member and commenting on what the honourable member is trying to say. I have awarded everybody, each and every one of you, an opportunity to talk when you want to be heard. All you need to do is raise your hand. I've never ever stopped anybody from addressing this committee. I shall continue to do that, but I would expect that you give each other the same respect. It's very difficult to control you, and to control and give some form of stability in the meeting and order if we are going to have the comments right from behind members that are talking to me. Talk to all of you. I'm sure you will give me that cooperation as we go forward. The Honourable Landers, then.
Listen, I must direct an appeal to the Honourable Feki Mento. She's my comrade. I note the point she makes, but some of us do have difficulty in this distinction that's been drawn between classified information and what is referred to here as state security information. And we've taken note of all the comments on this clause, and we'd like an opportunity, Chair, to just mull over this clause and then come back and address it with your permission and the rest of the committee.
Honorable, thank you. Sorry, Honourable Mentor.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was suggesting. I was saying instead of throwing the entire clause out through the window, let's look at problematic ways like state security matter and address those. I was just cautioning that we should not throw out the whole clause without examining it.
I think I understand that there is a strong proposal that 43 be deleted. But there is a further proposal that let's not be hasty. Let's look at the proposal and the motivation to delete it, and let's report back on that one. So we'll flag that on for members. There's no need to on this Friday, right, unnecessary temperatures. Can somebody please, somebody's phone is disturbing the system. Yes, will you please just see if you have your phone? I don't have a phone. Then I should be gone now. So 43 is flat, and there will be a report back from those who are wanting to consider it, and then we will consider whether it be removed or whether it be retained or whether it be retained in a different shape. There can be no problem with clause 44. Honorable Smart Time on clause 44. There's no problem with that. Extraterritorial application.
Chairman?
Yes, Honorable Amosting.
Okay, it's a technical point. And I know it's done. And I don't have a problem with the provisions itself, with one exception. But I think it should say application of the act, because technically speaking, there is no such a thing as the extraterritorial application of any laws of any country. It's a terminological shortcut utilized by people who don't fully understand the application of the law, and it found its way in legislation, raising academic eyebrows. So let's just say application of the act. Then the title doesn't matter one way or the other. That's one aspect. The other aspect, when usually provision of this nature are limited to citizens, the political alliance, I mean, why are we doing this? If you are a South African, you must be loyal to your country wherever you are. That's the cost. It's a bond of political allegiance. And similar provisions are limited to citizens, not to those who are domiciled in the Republic. If you're only domiciled to the Republic, you don't have a political allegiance to the country. You don't swear allegiance to the Constitution. You don't have political rights. You don't have all these things. For instance, wherever it's provided, often the crime of treason is only for the citizens. The non-citizen is not liable to commit treason. So I would delete any person domiciled in the Republic.
Honorable member, you want to be heard, Honorable member?
Yes. Already, through you, Chair, request a thorough study of this. Somebody is clear, because it will mean we'll have many in countries where a person, just because he's not a citizen, he or she will do whatever. You know, we need a serious look, because that's the problem right now in our country.
Yes, Honorable Mentor.
And I, in addition to the suggestion of Gabadeli, I would say that we need, I think I'm sitting in the wrong place today. We need a kind of a legal advice, because I don't think that any person can come into a country. Let's say, for example, somebody enters our territory to come and study, will be domiciled for the duration of the study of the waiting period, and has a right, is excluded from, if they commit acts that are tantamount to treason, they cannot be charged with a treason act. So I differ with him, and I seek further advice.
Yeah, Honorable Abbasini, you will know from your legal studies that there is a big difference between those people that reside in the country and those people that are domiciled. Domicile has got a specific legal meaning, and he's the person that has got some permanence in that particular place. It's not just somebody that is staying there and might be going back because his funds have run out and he's going back, his holiday period has expired. this person is actually staying there with some form of permanence. That's what the domicile actually means. It's honorable advocacy.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, that creates an additional difficulty. A non-citizen who is permanently in South Africa will be a permanent resident, and that's a specific status in law under the Immigration Act. That is permanent resident. When we're dealing with domicile, it's an elective choice. You can elect domicile in South Africa, you can elect domicile for one purpose, for another purpose, so you can elect domicile for contractual purposes, etc. It's a very, very broad, uncertain, and not unified category. And since this is something to which very severe criminal sanctions attach, we must have legal semantic solidity. We must know what it is that we're talking about. So if we want to pursue the extension of the Act to non-citizens outside the boundaries of the country, not inside the boundaries as the Honorable Mentor was suggesting, but outside the boundaries of the country, then we must use the concept of permanent resident, as it was another section of the Act, or the bill.
A permanent residence doesn't cover domicile. Honourable Member, I think the issue that we're debating is simple. There are a number of laws that we have already enacted out of this Parliament that is meant to cover the same scenario we are trying to cover here. We know that the mischief or the evil that we are trying to prevent here, and we know who we want to direct to that. Whether it's domicile, whether it's permanent residence, whether it's including residence, can we have a look at that state law advisor and just capture what we have said so that we harmonize this thing with other pieces of legislation, particularly the criminal, you know, those criminal sanctions where we are seriously looking at that targeting more than just your South African citizen. We just look at that and then come and advise on that, because I don't think you're going to be able to remove domicile. You might, on what the Honourable Member Senior said, include permanent residence, because the two could be different. Honourable
Member. Mr. Chairman, if you insist on domicile, I suggest that somebody, that we insert a definition, because to the best of my knowledge, there is no unified definition of domicile. It will vary from purpose to purpose, from court rules to contracts, etc. So let's have clarity on what it is that domicile means, because again, this attaches to criminal provision.
Honourable, I think our common law does cover that, but there's no problem in going to look at the definition. I think what we need to capture more is who are the people that you're trying to target. Can we flag the things as we get the report back on that? Then can we go? Yes, Honourable.
Why does the government of the United States want to extradite Julian Assange? What is he? Is he Australian or Swedish? Australian. Extradite him to America to face and haul him before American courts. The alleged acts Julian Assange perpetrated, I'm not sure exactly whether they constitute offenses, occurred outside America's borders. But the Americans are resolute. They want him to come back to America and they try. Now, do we say that that's okay? It's perfectly within their rights? Or, in terms of our law, Chairperson, would we be
would we be acting illegally if we wanted to do the same?
Honourable members, I think the point has been made. I think the instruction to the state law advisor is simple. Can we then go on to 45? Can be no problem with 45. Prosecuting authority must give you that, what's in it. Can we then stop the honourable members? And can we take the presentation of the state law advisor? Is the document...
Can I have a second on 45? Just 1 second. I have a comment and I'm trying to reconstruct it.
Yes, Honourable. Are you going to do that now?
Yeah, if you don't mind. In our comment, SP2, we made a proviso, save in respect of section 42, for improper classification. And I would perhaps ask if you can, and I want to consider the benefits of it. Because while I understand that the in respect of other situations, you may want to have a self-protection, but in respect of 42, that could be used to prevent the punishment. People from the inside can prevent people from the inside. Here, in 42, we are punishing people from within the state if it's something wrong. The others, in respect of the other sanctions, we are punishing evildoers outside the state. In 42, we are punishing evildoers within the state. So, come on, bear with me. I mean, what is it? Becoming personal. So, in that case, having an organ of stating authorized that would seem to be improper, but consider it.
The honourable member is asking me to consider it, and I think you must consider it in good spirit and in good faith, honourable member. Can we then go, in the time that is left, to the document? And I don't expect the state law advisers to take us through the whole document.
It's not a point of order, Mr. Chairman, if I may. I said earlier that at one point, because part of this chapter, we have a couple of amendments which are new sections in our document to this chapter. So for as long as we don't close the debate on this chapter, so that whenever it's convenient to you all, I can put them to you.
Can I get some idea along your presentation is going to be on the
My presentation is going to be 7 minutes. The discussion that my presentation may engender may be longer.
I shall look at honourable member, and at the appropriate time I will give you permission to make that presentation, but not now, because we have a document to go through. But you will get an opportunity, as I always do, give you. And can we go then to the state law advisor and tell us what it is that we have before us and how you intend to deal with it? Ms. Boyce?
Thank you, Chairperson. We prepared two documents. The one document is a document that just contains the discussions and the amendments that were proposed yesterday and on the clauses 23 and the classification review panel. And then the second document is a part of the bill, the working draft document, where we've inserted some of the clauses so that the committee members may have a look at what the relevant provisions will look like. So what we will do is after today we will go back and we will try and finalize everything and then email a draft version so that everybody then has that document. But it's just a bit bulky to at this stage hand out something that we're going to change and keep on changing. So for the purposes of today's discussion, we just made an extract of that working document, and that's what you have as the second bulk document. Chairperson, if I may, on the
23, this is now your review panel. And I take it that that has pretty well been sealed. The alterations and the amendments that you were asked to make were basically all agreed upon. So we expect merely to find the words here that we had asked you to insert. Yeah. Are you going to take us through the other document then?
Chairperson,
we will deal with this, with the clause 23 again, just to make sure that you did capture what it is that we had asked you to do. But are you wanting to take us through the other document?
Yes, Chairperson. What we can do is we can go through the second document. You're quite correct. In the first document, we just underlined where we made some changes. But if I may, just on that, just raise one aspect on the second document that's titled Proposals on Clause 23. In the respect of where we propose that a court may condone non-observance, and that's in Clause 23, sub-clause 5, we just want to insert some other wordings that we think might clarify the intention a bit more. So if I may just read that particular aspect, then I think we can just go on to the other document. Clause 23.5, we indicated that we need to maybe just have a belt and braces approach in that particular aspect where we provide for a time period referred to in 23.4. So we've inserted the sub-clause 5, a court may condone non-observance of the time period referred to in section 23.4a, and then we want to insert the words in bringing an urgent application to court on good cause shown. So that will make it then clear that it's for the time period, and that person will then bring an application on an urgent basis so that there's not a time period that the person needs to adhere to. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, you're on page 1, and you're in bracket 5 towards the bottom of that page.
That is correct, Chairperson.
And you read out something that is not there.
Those are the words that we wanted to insert, that we just wanted to alert the committee on, because it's not there, and we're supposed to make that clearer.
The way it appears here seems to be okay. That's what we asked them. What the state law advisor was offering was another alteration to the one that is here. But I'm saying the one that is here seems to be quite okay. Honourable Mentor?
Application.
Honourable Members? Yes, Honourable Ambrosini.
I'm very comfortable with what's written here. I don't think we need to prescribe to the court the context in which it may condone. It could be most likely it's going to be within the context of an urgent application, but it may not be. We give them the power, they've got the judicial discretion. That's exactly what they do every day, and I'm comfortable with the 5 as it is written.
Yeah, that's what I said myself on the line. Honourable Mentor?
The drafter to clarify why adding those two words would be of value.
Thank you, Chairperson. We've drafted this to just ensure that, or the suggestion is, whilst we drafted this particular matter, when we looked at it again, we thought maybe just to ensure that it clarifies the position and when an application is made, that it relates to an urgent application. And that was the extent why we wanted to bring in the words on an urgent application.
Honourable Members, it's a simple thing. You either leave it as it is or you add those words.
The addition of the words will restrict the scope of application of the provision. So as it is, it's broader.
Honourable members, I'm going to go against what I said yesterday. I'm going to ask the state law advisor to include the urgent part and to bring it back to us. Okay? Because it's simple, it's not going to take a lot of time. Let us see it in the text and let us then consider. Okay? It was our understanding that we would not go back on what is in the document here now, but on that point, because it is an additional proposal, we'll go back to that. The other issues I expect to find here are things that we agreed upon, and the state law advisor is merely going to draw our attention to it. Not for debate. Honourable Ms. Boyce?
Thank you, Chairperson. The other matter that was discussed yesterday was on page 2 of the document. It's under the establishment of the Classification Review Panel. It was raised under 3, and it was proposed that a new BD inserted there. No access to classified information may be withheld from the Classification Review Panel on any ground.
Simple, and that's what we agreed to next.
Chairperson, then on page 3, under the Constitution and Appointment of Classification Review Panel, just a reformulation of subsection 1, due regard having been given to A, participation by the public in the nomination process, B, transparency and openness, and C, the publication of the short list of candidates for appointment. Sub 2, the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence must table a list of 5 persons for approval by the National Assembly. And 3, the National Assembly must, by resolution with the support of the majority vote of its members, upon approval, submit the list of 5 persons to the Minister for appointment.
That's exactly the way we said it, Honourable Members. Proceed to bracket 5, if you may.
Chairperson, that was already agreed to, with the omission of taking out the, at least, at the underlining and the bracket.
Are we going to page 6 now?
That's correct.
Yes.
Okay, I don't want, I'm not trying to create undue problems. The privilege of having a mind is that you can change it, and this is a technical matter, which I discussed with you privately. It was brought to my attention by one of the members of the public during a recess. The way this originally read, the word at least one member was in 5, was at the beginning of A, B, C, and D. And we asked them to put them up. But actually, they were correct in the way they did it. Because the way this is done, and it might be an excessive interpretation, but it is a possible interpretation, is that one member could satisfy 2 or even 3 of these requirements. So you could have one member who is an expert in constitution and the law and security matters, while the intention here is one member is this, one member is this, or one member is that. You could even have one member who by himself, with his own qualification, satisfies all 3. So I think we need to put it back the way the state law advisors had put it originally.
Honorable mentor? Honourable Mentor, Honourable Honourable Abrasini, we had closed this discussion, and I am not suggesting that what you're saying is incorrect. What has been asked now, Honourable Members, is that we open up the discussion which we had agreed upon. If it is clearly wrong, then I must allow that to be open. Are you satisfied that this is clearly wrong? I don't think I don't think that the person that we are talking about, or the person, the five persons, it could well be that they all have the same qualifications, and that they all have these qualifications that we are referred to. But one will be appointed first, because he has got the constitutional knowledge, another one will be appointed because he's got the archive knowledge.
The point is...
Honourable Mentor first.
One possibility, but the other possibility is the possibility that Honourable Ambrosini is raising, which I'm also concerned about. That. What if that you end up with only three people, whereas you have five people, and of the three, you do have the spectrum of qualifications and expertise that you have outlined here. So I think the intention is to make it tight that it will be five people and it will be the broad spectrum of expertise. And the place that I think you can do is by going back to how you have originally done.
Honourable Member, Honourable Adversary.
I want to clarify. The problem here is that, as we mean it, of the four members, three must have the qualification and the fourth one could be a poet. The way it is written, it is possible that you have one member with all three qualifications and you get three poets.
The way I read it here is that it must be suitably they must qualify. They must qualify in terms of what's being said here.
Okay, Honourable Member, the discussion is closed. Let me go to the State Law Advisor. The problem here is a legal one. The legal one is that the members, the committee wants that the panel, the members must have all members must have those qualifications. When you put them together, there will be one that has that qualification, and there will be another one that has got constitutional law experience. Now, what we're putting to you, Ms. Boyd, is can you check if this has been properly captured? That the situation that the Honourable Abrasini is raising, and I don't want to comment that there are poets who might land up with poets the way it is structured now. I just don't want to waste time on a discussion that we've already entered into. If it is so that the way it is structured now is not capturing what you intended, these are the honourable members that said take it out, they're now asking to insert it again. So, if this is not capturing what we said, you know what it is with the committee. Will you report back with the text properly altered and address us on that? Is that okay, Honourable Member? Well, the point was that we had agreed we would not enter into things that you had finalized. But there is now a proposal or a concern that this does not truly represent what it is that we want. And I think it's appropriate for the law, State Law Advisor, just to look at it and report that, because I myself am not going to. I mean, I don't believe that the way it's structured here we get to land up with a poet that is suggested by the Honourable. What's her name? Yes, that's the way it was. Ask the State Law Advisor to look at that and come back on that. Can we go to page 6, Ms. Boyd?
Let me check it. On page 6, under the decision of the Classification Review Panel, subclause 1 there, the Classification Review Panel may confirm, vary, or set aside any classification decision taken by the head of an organ of state and instruct the head of an organ of state concerned to change the classification status of the classified information if necessary. Jefferson, and that is the extent of the document.
Well, remember, this thing is sealed except for those two issues. Am I correct? Then Honourable Poise, you'll report back very briefly on those two issues when we meet again. I hope the Honourable Members are taking notes so that we don't get into debating this issue again. Can you then take us to the next document, Honourable Poise?
Certainly, Chairperson. The next document, I tried to number the pages, but unfortunately my laptop didn't want to accept the page number, so I apologize for the document not having page numbers. I will see to it that the next time around the page numbers will be inserted to a person. Chairperson, on the aspect of clause 17 and 21, we will come back with the relevant sub-clause headings and making the changes as it required by the committee. What we've done as well, we've incorporated clauses 21, 22, and 23 with the amendments that were discussed by the committee. And we've also included the classification review panel. We've just inserted it after clause 24, but we need the guidance of the committee as well on where to correctly place the classification review panel, because it deals with reviews, it might be suitable to have it there just before appeals. But it's just for consideration by the committee to see how it fits in the working document. Yes, and then on the aspect of clause 30 and clause 31, we were asked to come back to the committee in respect of where the function should lie and whether it should lie with the agency or the classification review panel. And with the permission of the committee, I would like to ask my colleague, Mr. Sifa Makabeni, to just report briefly on the matter. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Chair. We've looked at clause 31, Chairperson, and in respect of paragraph A of that clause, we of the view that that function is a function and research for the classification review panel. And so it would need to be clarified that it's a function that is taken over by the classification review panel. In view of paragraph B, Chairperson,
just 1 minute,
page sub 1, paragraph.
You're going to have to page through the, because the numbers are running. So you're going to find the chapter 10, and then it is goes.
Thank you, Chair. So, clause 30, paragraph, clause 30, subclause 1, paragraph 8, we are of the view that it's a function and research for the classification of your panel. So, it would need to be clarified that function goes over to the review panel. Clause 30, section 1, paragraph B, in view of the discussion that the committee had yesterday, then the committee needs to decide if it is necessary for the agency to retain that power, Chairperson. This relates to on-site inspections, reviews, and reviews for purposes of monitoring the protection of information. You would recall, Chairperson, that you discussed the IGI laws and the IGI formulations and the auditor general. So the committee would need to take a decision on that issue. And then sub-clause 2, excludes the police and defense from the agency's oversight. And we are of the view that... Oh, sorry, Chair. I'm getting lost. I should be on clause 30, subclause 1, and paragraph 3. And then subparagraph 1, Roman figure 1. The agency should retain that function. This relates to giving assistance to organs of state in the handling of requests, everything. And subclause 1, paragraph 3, subparagraph 2, Roman figure 2, it is proposed that the provision should be removed completely, Chairperson, as
this is Roman 2.
Yes, Chairperson, C2. As the agency would not need to provide that assistance to, and the panel cannot provide it either to the minister, as they would be undertaking the review.
The minister will no longer be the approval body for the entire time, so it's up to the reinforcing your point.
No, Honorable Smart, our reasoning is that the agents won't play that role because it doesn't have it won't be overseeing appeals by ministers in the various departments, as the review would be done by the panel, the review of the decisions that come through to the thing. So it would be the panel's role to review those decisions, but then the panel cannot undertake support and advice to the minister on appeals and then review those decisions.
The section reference is confusing. Surely, clause 25 is the one in which you appeal the refusal to classify this particular matter. And that appeal, now, the reference in this section, study C, Roman 2, the reference is to section 25. So just help me if I'm on the, remembering the wrong section. 25 is surely the appeal procedure. Yes, but which is becoming an appeal to a retired judge. And then to the judge. Ah, gotcha.
Honourable members, can we proceed? Okay. Oh, sorry.
To comment on the proposal about clause 30, subsection 1H, the proposal they are making about giving the function to the panel.
No, they not say they're giving it, they say it's already there.
I wanted to ask a question in relation to that clause. The monitoring of the monitoring of policies and programs, are we not usurping the role of other state machineries like Parliament, etc., to monitor policy and programs, and usurping it away from constitutionally of mandated institutions and giving this to this panel?
Honourable members, I think what we have asked the state law advisor to look through this section and come and give us advice, put proposals forward. We still have to debate this. I think in conjunction the way we normally do, can we take the proposal first and finish the presentation, and then we can enter into discussion, because I think we're going to run out of time, and I think once we at least have the presentation, we have the knowledge and we can go home and we can look at it and think about it.
Process. Yeah, but you must be consistent. You must apply that rule to all of us at all times.
Honorable Mantle, it was when I saw you that I decided to deviate from the rule because you were looking at me so friendly and that I felt obliged to deviate from the normal rule on the faking. It was a special...
I am hostile now, Ted. Treat us equally all the time.
Okay. I didn't have it in me to sanction you on that. Can we proceed quickly and take the balance of the school's city?
Thank you, Chair. And then paragraph D, chapter 10 of subclause 1, we believe that function is covered by the classification of your panel provision, chapter 10. And then clause 30, subclause 2, paragraph 8, which chapter 10 should be retained by the agency. And paragraph D as well, chapter 10. Paragraph C1, Chairperson, Roman Figure 1, it is proposed that the agency still retain that function. And then subparagraph 2, Chairperson, this function will be carried out by the staff of the classification review panel. C, Roman Figure 2. And then paragraph D to H, these functions are all to be taken over by the classification review panel. And then we are asked whether which provisions apply to valuable information and which apply to classified information. And the way we've looked at it, Chairperson, is that all the provisions of the clause that we propose to be retained by the agency would apply to valuable information, Chairperson. And that all those that are taken over by the panel would then apply to classified information. The only exception in this regard, Chairperson, would be 32C, Roman Figure 1, which is retained by the agency. And this is with regard to expert support and advice to organs of state on classification and declassification. And then clause 31. In our view, this clause is no longer required and may be removed completely as the classification review panel will take over the functions of the agency. And any appeals from the panel's decisions would then lie to court. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable members, you heard the proposal from the State Law Advisor. You asked for that input. You got that input, Honourable Member. Read.
I think Mr. Makabeni's work is wonderful, but A, valuable information should come out, and we need to
know. What I think the Honourable Campesini is agreeing to is that we adopt for that input.
No, I don't.
I didn't ask whether you agreed to the input, Honourable Members.
I know.
What I said is that we had asked for the input, and we got the input now. Now, I'm not going to allow further discussion on the matter because it has come to a time when we need to adjourn. There are members that have asked the special because of flight, otherwise they will be stuck here for the rest of the weekend. I want to remind you of two things, Honourable Member, that we will meet on Monday at 10. I also want to remind you that your members' interest documents need to be in by today, those of you that haven't. You got one. I didn't get one. You get an extension. Okay. Honorable members, when we get back on Monday, we will take the rest of the presentation of the State Law Advisor. I am sure it is going to be in a more complete form. So you will probably get another document. Because they did address me on the fact that they were short of time.
Yeah. May I suggest that we as a committee thank Advocate Voices and Mr. Makabeni? Because, I mean, they've had an impossible workload. We sit day and night. When we adjourn, they must go and do work. I mean, so do we have to go and do reading, but they have to go and do drafting work. So thank you very much for that. It's actually too much, sir. I think we've been asking too much of them.
Yes, Honourable Landers.
Yes. Mindful of the Honourable Dean Smuts's assertion that we asked too much of them, which I agree with. I still believe that we should, in the next 2-3 days, obtain a working document that contains all these changes and drafts. I'm going to continue reminding you until we get it. Please, thank you.
I'll continue with my announcement. On the work that we are busy with, I'd like a instruction to speak to the parliamentary law advisors so that we don't burden the state law advisors to look at the definition clause to see which definition no longer applies. Not to do any adjustments, just to come and tell us, for example, national interest and those things, so that because we're going to get to the definition clause very soon. So when we get there, we don't have to do that work ourselves. And then also to take into account if they can liaise with the state law advisor, because we have also recognized that there are some other definitions that might have to be included. If they can perhaps just list that below without getting into the definitions itself, just so that we are reminded and have a document that is perhaps going to assist us in the way forward. Can I be allowed to do that, Honourable Member? Honourable Kutsi? When we come back on Monday, we're going to meet in E249, okay? And remember, it is 10 o'clock. Unless there's anything else, the Honourable Kutsi and the Honourable Aposini wanted to be heard.
Mr. Chair, are we going to sit the whole week, or is it only on Monday next week?
I think on Monday next week, after we've consulted with Justice and all, we have looked at the parliamentary program, we will then decide in the committee whether, because it seems we might have to be sitting in the afternoon, because Justice is going to be sitting in the morning. So, yes, Honourable Aberystwyth.
We have thanked the state law advisors and the tradition of the old medieval guilds. Usually the youngest person must thank the master. And I think I want a word of thank you from me personally, because the first have been the most difficult for your chairmanship. You have been very tolerant, benevolent, equanimous, and have given proof of extraordinary chairmanship capacity in what is a very difficult deal. So I feel that at least I, and possibly on behalf of others, need to thank you for your chairmanship.
Thank you, all members. This meeting is now adjourned.
It's a Friday, then they're getting a good meeting.